Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:09 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 5th, and we had a big move in oil today. It was up over $2 and pushing on to a new recovery high, so reasserting the medium-term recovery path. I think it is, though, relatively important to also look at what else is going on in the oil sector, because when we think about the longer-term chart, then we've seen on a number of occasions that prices have popped below $40 since 2008, but those moves have never really been sustained. So $40 is probably about the point where enough of pain is experienced by suppliers that they're willing to cut back on supply. And that's exactly what Saudi Arabia has said today, that they will cut back on supply because they want to see higher prices. And that's what they're trying to engineer. The other side of the equation, what we're also seeing is that there's a significant process of rationalization going on in terms of shale oil production. And shale oil production has historically been one of the more expensive sources of new supply. When breakevens are around $60, well, that hasn't really been an obstacle to the development of those resources over the last decade because prices spent a good lot of time above that level. But we're not quite there yet, and there is a multi-month delay factor between when prices do rise up to about $60 and when new supply starts to come into effect. But with this process of rationalization, well, then perhaps we're looking at a potential catalyst for a lower cost of production overall to start to come through. The potential then is that even though we're seeing prices rally right now, that it is unlikely that prices are going to sustain a move above $80. There is still plenty of supply around. It's just a matter of the price at which it can be brought to market in a profitable manner. And with the futures curve still not quite to a point where the shale producers can just go out and hedge production at productive levels, then they don't have an incentive to go out and do that. So there's no barrier to prices rising at least another $10 on the futures curve in order to generate that kind of guaranteed profits from highly levered players like the shale investors. What we are seeing, though, is that the MLP sector is starting to do better. And it is, in many respects, a high beta play on the oil sector overall. Then, if we think about the major oil producers, they were all in positive territory today as well. And Royal Dutch Shell, for example, this looks like a first step above the base here. It's continuing to firm from the region of the trend mean. BP has got a reasonably similar condition, although it is not quite yet above its trend mean, but it is starting to firm at least from the 250p level. There has been a lot of commentary that Exxon had to borrow money to pay its dividend, but the reality is that the share is firming from the region of the trend mean as well. And this is one of the clear defining characteristics of the sector, that you can still pick up an 8% yield on Exxon, and it's not all that far off that level for Royal Dutch Shell. For Chevron, it's nearly 6%. And again, these are companies that are obviously levered to the oil price. Chevron didn't hold all of its move in here today. But the bigger picture, of course, is that a lot of people were anticipating that these companies would go bust, and that's looking unlikely. And it's still a very cash generative business, particularly as we look towards the future with billions of new consumers likely to enter the global economy over the course of the next decade. That may well have been given a leg upwards over the last month with a number of trade deals being signed. Whether that is the Pan-African the Continental African Trade Agreement, which creates a tariff-free trade environment for the whole continent, whether it's RCEP for the ASEAN Plus region with both China and Japan and Korea all being part of it, but not India and the USA, or then whether additionally it is this new trade agreement or investment agreement that's been signed between Europe and China. On first blush, one might think that that's really all very much in favor of globalization, but perhaps it would probably be better characterized as a response to the splintering of globalization, because there is obviously a clear desire to set up these regional trade agreements and inter-region trade agreements because of this splintering in environment overall. There is likely to be enthusiasm about these trade agreements in the short term, and that's likely to stoke investment demand, and certainly it will boost trade and economic activity in all of these regions, which is certainly a positive. Of course, as the strength of these independent regions and independent agreements become established, then there is obviously going to be a knockback from that, because what we're definitely seeing is that the world seems to be willing to look past everything that China does as long as they're making money. And I think that's very similar to the same kind of activity that the stock market does. They will look past the sins of inconsistency in a trend as long as they're making money. And then when things start to turn around, well, then everything seems to be wrong with the trend and the company or the asset class. But as long as prices are rising, then the crowd will look past anything that is a countervailing argument. So obviously human rights are a big issue with regard to China, and it will likely become a factor in the future, but it doesn't appear to be something that the market is particularly worried about at present. When we think about how is the Chinese stock market doing, well, the CSI 300 was up in a dynamic manner in here today. This is consecutive days on the upside now, and it is clearly pulling away from this short-term range and moving back up to test the region of the peaks from the last 13 years. Then the renminbi has also been a source of strength for the market overall. It was up in a dynamic manner yesterday. It didn't quite hold its advance today. It's really quite overbought in the short term. I don't think it's beyond the bounds of possibility at all that we get some form of consolidation. The dollar in particular is quite oversold by really any measure, but it closed on the low of the day, particularly versus the euro. And there is obviously an argument against being too bullish about the potential for a rebound in the dollar, because the USA is printing money faster than anyone else, and they are likely to continue to run significant deficits for quite a bit longer than anybody else. So they seem to be willing to print well in excess of anyone else, and they're deliberately devaluing the currency. And that is helping to stoke demand for just about all commodities. But gold followed through on the upside today, following the upper dynamic that we had yesterday. Silver was also in positive territory, and it continues to outperform. So it is now pushing on to new recovery highs, and that is really a strong confirmatory signal that we are coming out of this corrective phase and potentially moving onwards towards the next up leg in the gold bull market. Platinum is finally starting to play ball, and it has so far at least sustained the move above $1,000, up 50 in here today, recouping most of the intraday decline from the peak yesterday. When we think about what the outlook was for platinum over the last few years, it couldn't have been more negative. I think one thing that seems to escape the attention of many people is just how small the market is. open interest is only in the region of about 60,000 contracts. So the contract value for just one is about one contract is 56,000. So with a couple of billion dollars, one could buy all the platinum on the market. And that really does help to highlight just how small this market is. The reality is that it collapsed in 2014 and 15 because of the diesel cheating scandal, and it is starting to recover somewhat because of enthusiasm about green hydrogen. And that is also, I think, being fueled by the fact that platinum is relatively undervalued, and particularly versus palladium. Palladium prices were also up in a dynamic manner in here today, and up almost double the advance in platinum prices. But platinum is coming from a very low level, and palladium is firming from a really very high level. I think that there is also perhaps some interest in a pairs trade from a hedge fund's perspective, because platinum has been trading at an enormous discount relative to every other precious metal, but most particularly against the palladium price. Obviously, there is a clear potential now that we might have a change, or at least the argument that there could be substitution back into platinum rather than palladium for regular catalytic converters. But then, of course, we have the growth potential, which in many respects has been funded and pioneered by the platinum miners themselves to create a new market for platinum in hydrogen fuel cells. The iron ore price is also right in the region of its previous peak. It's been doing phenomenally well over the last while, and now it's back in the region of the peaks from 2012. So it's perhaps not, it wouldn't be too surprising if we were to see some consolidation here, and it does tend to be an illiquid, rather choppy environment. China is doing whatever it can to reduce its demand, or its reliance, I should say, on the main iron ore producers, which are BHP, Rio, and Vale, and I guess we could also add Fortescue Metals into that. But with the uptick in demand for iron ore, BHP is pushing on to new recovery highs. Rio Tinto is right in the region of its peak. It lost access to the Simandou iron ore deposit in Guinea, and China was there to pick it up. But they also have plenty of copper and aluminium, and these are likely to be the metals that pioneer the next big bull market in commodities. Iron ore prices were in positive territory, copper prices were in positive territory again in here today, but this is somewhat overbought in the short term, although this little range has been a rather orderly consolidation over the course of the last while. It's relatively similar sized to the moves that we saw in July and September, and perhaps again in October. And a sustained move now below 350 cents would be required to question the potential for additional upside. When we think about the rest of the commodity complex, cotton has also been resurgent, and this is also coming from a reasonably depressed level overall. There has been a ban on Chinese imports to the USA. That's helping to support domestic supplies. The move we've had over the last month has clearly broken the two-year downtrend, so there's clear scope for additional upside. Then when we think about soybeans, it's been able to clear the peaks put in back in 2016, and it continues to improve. Lumber prices did phenomenally well during the lockdowns because of increasing demand for housing against a background of low supply. The price is now right back in the region of the peaks and beginning to ease again. We've certainly seen that lumber is the kind of market that moves its limit on successive occasions until it stops, and then it comes back down again. There is the likelihood, at least, that some of the initial demand for moving and housing that was spurred by the lockdowns and the desire to move to the suburbs may in fact be running out of steam. The mass migration argument, I think, is less compelling as we come out of the coronavirus overall. Of course, we're not quite there yet. The UK, it has permissioned the AstraZeneca vaccine, so they will have access to more solutions, more vaccinations, and perhaps get it done faster than other countries. The FTSE 100 was in positive territory today. It's continuing to recover and holding this move back above the trend mean. Having been weak yesterday, the pound recouped some of its loss and was in positive territory in here as well today. The reality today, I think, is that no country wants a strong currency, but the USA seems to want a weaker currency more than anybody else. And that has been one of the primary factors in the outperformance of emerging markets. The Asia dollar index was in positive territory again in here today. The Latin America dollar index trended down for a decade, but it is now back above its trend mean, really for the first time on a sustained basis since late 2017. The Brazilian market continues to rebound in here. Now, in nominal terms, it's back in the region of its peak, but that really does help to highlight just how much of a decline the real has had. And when we think about that in other currencies, then the allure of the Brazilian market was significantly dampened by the performance of the currency over the last decade. But now the question is whether we're at a point where the real can steady or even appreciate from here. It is now trading below its trend mean, and it found support there in here today. So some of these commodity producing currencies could potentially start to attract interest, and that would also be beneficial from the perspective of international investors. The South African rand has pushed back up into this range that persisted between 2018 and 19. It has almost completely unwound the decline during the first quarter of 2020, and now it's a big question whether it can break this dollars or the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows. Obviously, a lot of people are worried today about the impact of the additional COVID variant that's spreading in South Africa, as well as the one that's spreading in the UK. But then, of course, that may also be a factor in the renewed strength of platinum and in palladium. But now, when we think about, well, what's going on internationally and all over the world, well, the one thing that we can certainly think about is every country wants reflation. Every country is going to do whatever it takes to try and get their economy back on a firm footing. India has been up on consecutive days, and it has continued to hold a sequence of higher reaction lows since March. It's on the cusp of extending this breakout to new all-time highs. And this, I think, is a really quite impressive move overall. When we think about the longer term outlook, then the Indian market, and sorry, this is in euro terms, that's why we're getting a different chart. I apologize for that. When we look at it in local currency, it is certainly on new highs, but in euros, it's almost at new highs. The dollar's weakness has pushed it onto new high ground as well. When we think about it in pound terms, it's at a new high. So from the perspective of international investors, India's market is certainly becoming more attractive. When we think about what the likelihood is for growth, well, India has got maybe 600 or 700 billion people that are going to enter their most productive period in life over the course of the next decade. And that's likely to be a very significant growth driver because the administration there is very much intent on trying to at least provide people with the tools necessary to achieve their goals of a better lifestyle. And obviously this does not happen overnight, and it is plagued by bureaucratic inefficiencies. But the reality is that as long as the government is trying to remove obstacles rather than putting new ones in place, it's likely to be rewarded by stock market performance. I thought that this this chart of the MSCI World Index, excluding the USA, was particularly interesting because this index has been going sideways now for decades. And particularly when we look at it in US dollar terms, it's been going sideways since about 2007. And now it's coming back up towards the peaks. So this looks really very similar to the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. So when we then contrast the performance, well, what it is really telling us is that emerging markets, which are dominated by China, the MSCI World ex-US, which is dominated by Europe, Japan, and China, have been doing nothing for the last 13 years. And when we then think about, well, what has been making the running, well, that when we add back in the US markets, then we have a very different chart, because clearly broke out with Wall Street in 2016, and it has done spectacularly well from the lows put in February, March, all the way up to the peaks recently. Now, we certainly have a short-term overbought condition, and there is scope for some additional consolidation, but we don't have a great deal of evidence just yet that this trend has in fact ended. And it has been pioneered by the inclusion of these mega-cap technology companies. Now, the big question is, how much of an impact has the massive availability of liquidity over the course of the last 12 years boosted the value of these companies? Valuations for companies like Apple, for example, have increased very substantially. And when we then think about, well, where is the running going to come from in terms of the best performers in 2021? Well, the one big thing is that a number of big technology companies have not pushed on to new high ground, and they are underperforming right now. And we might be entering a period of time where we can no longer rely on five or six extraordinarily large companies to provide all of the stock market performance, but that it is going to be smaller companies and materials companies and energy companies which could provide much better performance over the course of the next while. And then, of course, we have the potential for emerging markets to do substantially better on a currency adjusted basis because the dollar continues to look like a bear trend overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.